Psalm 33, verse 12 says this, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." And we could add, "And cursed is the nation who opts for another God." Good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries. From His Heart is heard every weeknight at 6 p.m. Central Time right here on American Family Radio. Well, everyone is talking about the election today. We are all thinking about that. We're looking to see who won this race, who won that race. I'm in Texas and in the Four States area, so we're right here in Northeast Texas, and Arkansas is just a few miles away. Louisiana's not far away. Oklahoma's not far away. The Arklatex, the Four States area. And so Governor Abbott won in his fight with Beto O'Rourke, and we are grateful for that because of the different stands that those two men take. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders won in Arkansas, and Mike Huckabee's daughter, and so that's a good thing. Mike is a personal friend and loves the Lord, and Sarah does too. So we are we're praising the Lord for that, but we were hearing all about the red wave. The red wave is coming, and the nation is in trouble with lawlessness and with all sorts of issues, that inflation and prices are up and things are looking bleak, and so we're going to change the direction, which everyone thought was going to happen, but evidently it didn't happen. The red wave never materialized, and so here to help me talk about this important subject is a man that I highly respect. He's a world historian, an American historian, an author of 20 books, a best-selling author. He has his own television program, a radio minute, the American Minute. His name is Bill Federer. He's a man I trust. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be with you.
So, Bill, your hot take on yesterday's election.
Well, I can't help but keep thinking of voter fraud. I ran for Congress several times, and I saw some of the things, for example, what's happening in Arizona and in Philadelphia, where there's lots of anomalies that, for example, when we ran, I was ahead, and then the computers go off, and the electricity goes down in the Board of Election, and when they reboot everything, we go from being ahead to behind. Mm. And then they have techniques where they orchestrate in advance an emergency that happens on election day. So for those not familiar, I ran for Congress in Missouri's 3rd, which was Richard Gebhardt, Dick Gebhardt. And so he was the Nancy Pelosi before Nancy Pelosi. And it was the most, he was the highest Democrat in the nation at the time. So it was a big race. We had the president's uncle chair my finance committee, and we raised several million dollars. But we saw things happen where, for example, my name was accidentally left off the ballot in five wards in the city of St. Louis. Another one, Mr. Odom went in to vote, and his name was not on the registered voter list, so they brought a lawsuit to keep the polls open late, and there was mayhem and confusion, and then the next day they found that this Mr. Odom had died 2 years earlier. They began to wonder who brought the lawsuit, and it went from the front page to the back page, and then it was forgotten, because you can't expect those that win through fraud to investigate themselves.
Right.
And lots of things. So what happened in Arizona, where you have, in an era where Elon Musk can land rockets in reverse, I mean, that we have the cybersecurity where we can do, to have voting machines not function on election day, that doesn't happen by accident.
Right.
You can't expect anybody to believe that this was this was just a random thing. My educated guess is that this was an intentional thing so they could disrupt the election. They're experts. Let me go back in time and give an illustration right there in Texas. It was a 1948 Senate race, a Democrat primary, and it was Lyndon Johnson running against the mayor of Texas, who was a Democrat at the time. And on election night, Lyndon Johnson loses. But in the confusion, they claim they have found a box of uncounted ballots in Alice, Texas, Jim Wells County, Precinct Number 13, which happened to have been the hometown of Lyndon Johnson. He was from that area, and the party boss was George Parr, P-A-R-R, and the whole state is focusing on this little race, and LBJ's campaign manager goes down there, and it's confusion. Well, at the end of the week, they discovered like 200 and some odd ballots, and they were all names from the local cemetery, signed in alphabetical order, with the same handwriting, with the same ink, and that was enough for Lyndon Johnson to win the Democrat primary. Well, the governor brings a lawsuit, and it goes all the way up to a Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black, and Abe Fortas was the person that helped to get the decision made, where he throws it back to the Texas Democrat Party that they get to decide. And so it was tied. And so they bring back a delegate from who's on business trip in Tennessee, and the vote is that LBJ's results are accepted. And
what year is this, Bill?
1948.
Yeah.
And so he was nicknamed Landslide Lyndon. And so it was sort of the classic of out-and-out voter fraud. And even when Abbott was there in Texas before he was governor, on the state website, he said, voter fraud is no newcomer to the Lone Star State. In the 1948 Senate race, the box of ballots found in the Jim Wells County Precinct Number 13. And then in a Washington Post article, there was a gentleman who was elderly in the 1970s, and he was on his deathbed, and he decided to come clean on his conscience. And so he gives a report to the Washington Post, and they printed, and he said that he was there, and George Parr said, we need this many votes. And so they basically forged them, and of course, shortly after that, George Parr, I think, committed suicide, conveniently, and then all the other ones that were involved died, and so this guy said that he wanted to, you know, come clean on his conscience, but they verified it. They had the FBI go down there and look at it all, and said, yeah, these are definitely anomalies, but that was the landslide Lyndon.
Yeah, that's just horrible.
1948 Democrat primary race.
Well, Bill, I saw this. I saw this tweet today. I think it was Jenna Ellis, and she said it was from Tucker Carlson. He said, "We're not very serious about democracy if we're using electronic voting machines and no photo ID." And so it seems like it's you know, election integrity 101. You have to show ID, and let's have paper ballots that can be traced, so we can't have these excuses like, oh, the machine's down. Sandy Rios played the clip of Maricopa County telling the voters, hey, we have two machines, readers, and one's down and one's working about 75% of the time. And it's like, good grief. You have these machines to be in use, what, once every 2 years, and you can't get it right? Doesn't seem like your state has trouble counting the votes in Florida.
Yeah, well, the biggest decision that was in Florida was as soon as Ron DeSantis got elected the last time, he had the person that was in charge of the elections in the Miami-Dade County, who had all kinds of ethical problems, replaced with an honest person. As soon as that happened, the Democrat Party gave up on Texas. They knew they could not win, excuse me, on Florida. because they knew without Miami-Dade, they couldn't win the state. And by the way, it was the New York Times that published the article in 1977. I went ahead and pulled it up. This is the quote. The disclosure made by Louis Salas, who was the election judge for Jim Wells County Box 13, produced enough votes in 1948 Texas Democrat primary runoff. Mr. Johnson became the party's nominee for the U.S. Senate. And he says, Johnson did not win that election. It was stolen for him, and I know exactly how it was done, said Mr. Salas, now a lean, white-haired 76-year-old. George B. Parr in South Texas, political leader whom Mr. Salas served for a decade, shot and killed himself April 1975. Mr. Johnson is dead, and so is his opponent. Mr. Salas said he decided to break his silence for a quest for peace of mind. And he said, I was just going along with my party. Mr. Parr ordered 200-odd votes to be added to Mr. Johnson's total. And with Box 13, Mr. Salas said he had seen the fraudulent votes, added them in alphabetical order, had them certified as authentic on order from Mr. Parr. Parr was the godfather. He could tell any judge, give us 80% of the vote and the other guy 20%. And we had it made in every election. And the New York Times article goes on. It says the Associated Press interviewed a former FBI agent, T. Kellis DeBrell. He confirmed Mr. Salas's statement. He says the last 200 votes had been in alphabetical order. And Mr. DeBrell said the last 202 names were made with the same colored ink in the same handwriting, whereas the earlier names in the poll list were written by different individuals with different color inks. And the final statewide count, including Box 13 votes, gave Mr. Johnson an 87-vote margin, earning him the tongue-in-cheek nickname Landslide Lyndon. So this is 1948. These tactics have been perfected. I spent 2 years with Phyllis Schlafly collecting stories of voter fraud from all around the nation. And she was a friend of mine. I spoke at her conferences numerous times. And it was astounding. The most insecure form of voting is computer voting. And people that have their doctorates in election statistics says you can either have accountability or anonymity. You cannot have both. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to have an anonymous ballot, there cannot be accountability. It's just, and then when I have a degree in accounting, and so you'd take all the auditing classes, and you never have the person do the accounting that also is the signer on the check. You cannot, there's no check and balance. They can just, so for example, there was one case where they always say, watch out for the accountant that never goes on vacation because they don't want somebody overlooking what they're doing. And oftentimes, for example, a real estate office has people writing checks for their rent and, that money's put into accounts. And then some people, are late making their payments, or maybe they don't make their payments. And so an accountant can simply take some of those rent checks and put them in a different account and then write themselves a check later. And, but the owner of the company doesn't know. So there's not a check and balance. And so when in the state of Arizona, to have the Secretary of State, who is the person certifying, making sure the election is honest, to have her race for governor be the one that they're having voter fraud problems with, and then she's the one overseeing whether or not it's fair, there is right. A conflict of interest.
Yeah, that's the fox guarding the hen house.
Any auditing, you could not have a accounting company, a CPA, say that you give the stamp of no account would put their signature to those results.
That's right. We're talking to
conflict of interest.
Exactly right. We're talking to historian Bill Federer. We're talking about the election. Psalm 33:12, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. If America does not return to the Lord, we are going to experience the wrath of God, because the wrath of God comes to those who reject Him. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve. Don't go away.
Sometimes you see a win, a glimpse of God in this broken world. Preborn rejoices in the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Preborn's mission is to love and help women in unplanned pregnancies by offering them the truth to help them make the right choice by providing free ultrasounds. You see, when an expectant mom hears her baby's heartbeat and sees the image of her baby on ultrasound, she's seeing a life created in God's image, and it's a divine connection.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
To learn more about Preborn's life-saving work, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Gaffney, host of Securing America, a program dedicated to protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. Each weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, we provide insights and recommendations about the most important challenges facing our nation from her most thoughtful experts and patriots. Join me to learn how you can help in Securing America right here at 11 p.m. Eastern Time.
What would you do?
Aunt Sadie, I appreciate your thought behind the gift card, but I just can't take it. I promise not to shop at Target because they allow men in areas that need to be private and protected for women and children. I hope you'll go to afa.net/target and learn about it. I'm not giving them my money.
Aunt Sadie didn't know about AFA's call to boycott Target, but she knows now, and so do you. Learn even more at afa.net/target. afa.net/target.
You know, if you feel like you're stuck with a healthcare plan that isn't affordable, or you simply just don't like how it works, well, right now, during open enrollment, is a perfect time to switch to MediShare. The typical family saves $500 a month when they join MediShare, and what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to the industry. That's double. And MediShare is the most trusted name in healthcare sharing. It's been around for 30 years. It's shared more than $4 billion in healthcare bills. And here's why now is the perfect time to make the switch. If you join MediShare Complete by January 1st, they will waive your new member fees and you'll save an additional 10% off your first year. That's right. No fee to join, 10% off every month for all of next year. But again, it's a limited time offer. So yeah, you're not stuck. You've got a great option. Call now, 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We're talking to Bill Federer. Bill is the senior fellow at the D. James Kennedy Center for Christian Statesmanship, Ministry of Evangelism Explosion International. He's a nationally known speaker and best-selling author of over 20 books. He's the host of the daily radio program called the Daily American Minute and the TV program Faith in History. Okay, so Bill, let me ask you this. Abortion seemed to be high on the list of priorities for people who want to return America to the killing of the unborn. That needs to be a law across the land. And I know people in exit polls were saying, hey, this was the issue for me. This is what got me out to the polls. Obviously, they don't talk about murdering the unborn. They talk about the right to choose, but choose what? Choose to murder your unborn by dismemberment. It's gruesome. Now, if that is the direction America wants to go, it seems to me, as my friend Mike Stone says, hey, you can't serve God and Molech. Molech, the god of the Moabites, who they would offer their children in a sacrifice to worship that detestable god. We don't have much hope as a society, Bill, in my opinion, if we want to secure the killing of the unborn.
I totally agree. And there's nothing more unjust than killing somebody that has not done anything wrong. There's the perfect example of innocence is a little baby, right? They have not done anything wrong. It's innocence. God would be an unjust God if he gave his stamp of approval to killing innocent babies. And in something in law, it's called silence equals consent. The rule of tacit admission, T-A-C-I-T, tacit admission. Black's Law Dictionary says, an admission reasonably inferable from a party's failure to act or speak. And so if you are silent in the face of certain activities, your silence, just standing there, is giving consent. The Apostle Paul stood there when they stoned Stephen. And he did not pick up a stone. He did not throw a stone. But in Acts chapter 22, the Apostle Paul was talking about what a sinner he was. And he says, I stood there while they stoned Stephen, giving my consent. So all you have to do is just stand there. And then you, when, you know, King Jehoiakim was taking Jeremiah's prophecy and cutting it out with a penknife and throwing it in the fire, nobody ripped their garments. Nobody said anything except three guys, El Nathan and Deliah and Gemariah, interceded and said, maybe, King, you shouldn't do this. But they get noted because they were at least speaking up. But another story in the Bible is Aaron did not get to go into the promised land because he was silent in the face of a sin. And so Leviticus 19 says, confront people directly so you will not be held guilty for their sin. And so Aaron and Moses are summoned to the door of the tabernacle. God tells Moses, take the rod, gather the assembly, and speak to the rock, water will come out. Well, he gathers the assembly, and he takes the rod, Aaron's rod, and he hits the rock once, hits the rock twice, water comes out. At the end of the chapter, in Numbers 20, it says, Aaron will not go into the promised land because both of you rebelled against me at the waters of Meribah. It's like, wait a second, we just read the chapter. Aaron didn't do anything. He didn't say anything. That's just it. He heard God tell Moses. He saw Moses lift up the staff the first time and hit the rock. That was Moses' sin. When Moses lifted up the rod the second time, Aaron knew what was coming. He heard what God said. He saw Moses. And Aaron didn't speak up. He didn't confront Moses. He just stood there silent. And when Moses hit the rock the second time, that was Aaron's sin because he didn't protest. And so God says, Aaron, you do not go into the promised land because you rebelled against me at the waters of Meribah. We have to understand this is a serious thing. If you are silent and they're killing babies, you're giving consent to the killing of babies, you'll be judged as if you did it. And, you know, in Leviticus 20, it says, any Israelite or foreigner living amongst you who sacrifices any of his children to Molech shall be put to death. If any member of the community closes their eyes when that man sacrifices one of his children to Molech, I myself will set my face against that man and his family and cut them off from Israel. And so in Proverbs 24, it says, rescue those who are unjustly sentenced to death. Don't disclaim responsibility by saying you didn't know about it. For the Lord who knows all hearts knows yours. He knows you knew, and he will hold you accountable. And so if we know about something, I tell people their tactic is to guilt trip Christians into being more Christian than Christ. They say, if you're Christian, you'll be silent. And while they teach children this transgendered agenda, right? So Christians are tolerant. We're supposed to tolerate everything, even mutilating little children, you know, chemical castrations, having their breasts removed, even before they reach, you know, adolescence and puberty. And they say, well, if you're a Christian, you'll be silent while we do all this to the children. Question, would Jesus teach that agenda to children? Jesus said in the beginning, God made a male and female. And so they're telling you, if you're really Christian, you'll let them teach something that Jesus would never teach. So if you're really Christian, you won't act like Christ. Yet Jesus said, if you stand by and are silent and you give consent, and one of these little ones that believes in me stumbles, it's better that a millstone be put around your neck and you be thrown in the depths of the sea.
Right.
And so it's going to be a rude awakening for those that think they're being more spiritual by not getting involved in politics when they realize by their silence they're giving consent to sin. They're inviting the judgment of God upon their heads.
Well, it's, you know, we lack courageous Christians today, and we lack courageous pastors who will stand up and be counted. And, you know, if you don't like it, tough. I tell people all the time, listen, I didn't write the Bible. I'm just telling you what it says. If you take issue with that, take it up with God, because he wrote it. It's his word. I'm just telling you, thus says the Lord. Bill, you know, when we kind of look between Democrats and Republicans, I mean, the platforms couldn't be more different. Obviously, not all the Republican candidates are good, solid, Bible-believing Christians. You know, it's just that's not the case. But it seems like if you're going to be a Democratic candidate, you have to toe the line with, hey, I'm pro-abortion and I'm pro-lawlessness and I'm, you know, all these, you know, I'm pro-homosexuality and pro-transgenderism. You have to be that, otherwise you can't be a candidate in their system. And here's the surprising thing, or the amazing thing. So the race in Pennsylvania between John Fetterman and Dr. Oz. Granted, I just full disclosure, I didn't follow that too closely. I don't know a whole lot about Dr. Oz, but I know Fetterman has had brain damage. People said, well, Fetterman is a socialist like Bernie Sanders. He's Bernie Sanders with brain damage. For that guy to win, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can almost run a pet rock on the Democrat side, and he'll win if he or she is for abortion, for gay rights, for all these liberal things, but that doesn't work on the Republican side. So if you have a candidate that's got some issues and some holes, he doesn't just win because he's a Republican. Can you expound on that?
Yeah, well, and also there's a large amount of absentee ballots and mail-in ballots in the Allegheny County and the different ones. You know, if I was an accountant and looking at, you would have random auditing at the very least of every election, and you would rotate the auditing companies. I mean, let's get, you know, Standard & Poor's. Let's get, you know, the different Anderson Cooper and Price Waterhouse. I mean, let's get an accounting company to do an audit of these elections, because you can't have more people voting than there are in a district. And one of the classics is you do not remove people's names off the registered voter rolls if they've moved away or died. Why? Because that allows there to be more registered voters. And so if you have a 30% voter turnout, but you have, you know, a lot of names, that leaves 70% that you can fudge and nobody will question it. And again, computer voting, there's lawsuits where they can check the computers the day before, they work great. They can check the computers the day after, they work great. But they can have a date-sensitive program hidden in there, where on the day of election, it'll sort it all out to a predetermined percentage. They have backdoor programs, because any computer voting machine, they're made in other countries. There's no monitoring of the manufacturing, the software. The modems to these computers are made in other countries. You know, in many cases, the company themselves is a foreign company. I mean, where's Dominion's headquarters? So that would not pass any auditor, any accountant's muster. They wouldn't sign off on the financial statements with that type of
Let me ask you this. So is that always cheating in one direction, or do the Republicans do that too?
Yeah, well, the Republicans do it too. Rick Santorum is a friend of mine, and he was running on the primary against Mitt Romney, and he won the Iowa primary. But the Mitt Romney rhino-type Republicans sat on Rick Santorum's victory for like 2 weeks, saying, well, we got to check, we got to check. Well, the way presidential elections work is it's structured. So if you win one primary, it gives you momentum going into the next and into the next. Well, they sat on Rick Santorum's victory for 2 weeks. And so he lost out on that momentum, which would have helped him in the next primary and the next primary and next primary. And then when they finally did announce it, well, too late then. Everybody knew that that was an intentional sitting on the results for a political purpose, and that was wrong. And that was a Republican primary. So it's human nature. And so, you know, the word electing, electors, elections, is in our Constitution and Bill of Rights dozens and dozens of times. Never once does it tell you how to have an honest election. It was assumed that at the founding of the country that you would have a moral population.
Right.
Even in 1965, 93% of Americans identified as Christian. 1965, it was 69% Protestant, 24% Catholic, and there were about 3% Jewish. But, I mean, the majority of the country in 1965 was Judeo-Christian. And, of course, that's when the ACLU began to sue, and that's when the secularism creeped into the schools with the cases to stop Bible reading and stop the, you know, Madeleine Murray O'Hare, stop the praying. And but so our government was designed, John Adams said, that our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. It's
right.
Designed to govern people who have morals. And once you have a population with no morals, I mean, think of it. If a party can put on their platform to kill innocent babies, is there anything they can't justify?
Right.
I mean, what's voter fraud compared to that? Once you get rid of morals, our system collapses because it's based on honesty. And if there's not an honest vote count, Stalin is credited with saying, doesn't matter who votes, what matters is who counts the votes.
Yeah.
And
Joe Biden said that too. Joe Biden said that just recently.
Really?
Go ahead.
So after I spent 2 years with Phyllis Schlafly getting all these stories of voter fraud from around the country, basically the only way to make sure that an election is honest is on election night at each precinct have paper ballots and have the election judges sit around the table and count the paper ballots all night long if necessary with observers watching, and then they all sign off on it, and then they tape the results to the window of the polling place. Then they box up the ballots and send it to the central place if they want to. And so if you're running for a local office, you can drive around to the different polling places in your district, look at the window, write it down, add it up. It better equal what they announce on TV that night. If you do it where it's just computers, then who knows what's if it's being
right.
tampered with. There's no – it would be if a Walmart store said don't to the, all their – tellers, you know, their cash register checkout personnel, don't count the cash at your cash register. We'll just count it all once it gets to the bank. We'll just put it all in a big bag and give it to somebody, and they'll count it once it gets to the bank. It's like, no, you count it at the cash register before it leaves, then you count it at the bank, and then you match the numbers up, and
right.
you can see. But to just say, we're not going to count it here locally, we're not going to tape it on the window, we'll just count it once it gets to the central place, that is, it would not pass any CPA audit. There's a conflict of interest. There's no checks and balances. There's different countries. You say, well, gee, we got lots and lots of votes. Yeah, you just break it into small groups, and you just keep counting them with observers there. That's the only way to absolutely make sure. I mean, when they're wanting to question, what do? They hand count them. Well,
right.
you may as well hand count them at the beginning rather than wait for a, you know.
That's exactly right. Well, we're talking to Bill Federer, and Bill is an American historian and an author.
and he is weighing in on the election. You're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shree. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Too busy to catch your favorite shows on the radio? Have no fear, because the AFR app is here. Download the app to have access to live broadcast, music streaming, as well as each podcast. Whether you're at work, at home, or on the go, it's easy to listen to AFR.
The AFR app is available not only for Apple and Android users, but also on Amazon Alexa and Roku.
Download the AFR app today at AFR.net. AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
The credit card debt happened when my daughter was born. I was using one credit card account to roll over into another credit card account, and it was snowballing.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
When I first called Trinity, the representative understood the need based on the situation. There were great people to work with. From the first phone call that I made, they had me on a track to mitigate the credit card debt.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
Working with Trinity gave me the ability to save thousands of dollars. My name's Doug, and thanks to Trinity, I'm debt-free for keeps.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Hey, I want to let you know about Operation Christmas Child. If you haven't heard about it, it's the Samaritan's Purse program to send a shoebox filled with toys and the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ around the world. They are looking this year to send the 200 millionth gift filled shoebox since they began in 1993. This Sunday at First Baptist Texarkana is our shoebox Sunday, and people are going to bring their shoeboxes in. We're going to have them all over the altar. We're going to pray over those, and then we send them to Dallas, and then from Dallas they send them out all over the world. We have a Bible study class, a Sunday school class in our church of dear ladies called the Golden Circle class, and they have done, I said 13,000, but I was corrected, it's 12,000. 12,000 boxes from that one class of about 60 to 70 ladies, and we are so excited about how they've just taken on this ministry. So it's collection week now through November 21st for Operation Christmas Child. You can go online and find out more. You can visit samaritanspurse.org/OCC, Operation Christmas Child, to learn more about drop off locations and what's needed for the shoebox and that kind of thing. It's a great thing to do with your family. Get your kids involved. Hey, we're going to make a difference in the life of a child somewhere around the world, because it is cool to see those kids get those shoeboxes. It's typically the only gift they get at Christmas is that shoebox from Operation Christmas Child. So be a part of that. Well, we are talking to Bill Federer. We're talking about the election. And Bill, I tweeted this out yesterday morning and wanted to get your response. But I said this: if we as a nation do not vote for law and order, life and liberty, then we are truly a nation of deceived fools who will literally vote for our own destruction. Now, we've been talking about voter fraud. If voter fraud is involved, and it seems like it is, especially in those areas where it's very loose, you know, you get to the place where, what's the point of voting? Why am I standing in line for 2 hours to vote when the fix is in? But let's look at the other side of the equation. If we as a nation vote for lawlessness, vote for open borders, vote for abortion, vote for inflation, vote for poor leadership, we vote for John Fetterman, who is brain damaged, what does that say about us, and what does that say about our future?
Yeah, well, it's not very hopeful, but when... back in Missouri, you had John Ashcroft, and I spoke at an event just 2 weeks ago with him. He's the former Attorney General of the United States, but he was running for Senate and against Mel Carnahan. Mel Carnahan had a son who was homosexual and was flying him on a private airplane from one homosexual event to another to... And the plane crashes. It actually crashes in my congressional district. And so he's dead. And they left his name on the ballot. And John Ashcroft suspends his campaign. I mean, he's not, how can you run ads against somebody that's dead? And they have a big, you know, funeral at the Capitol. And the Democrats keep campaigning and they leave his name on the ballot. The law says that you have to be a citizen of the state when you're elected, and he's dead. He is not a citizen. They vote for him. John Ashcroft gets defeated by a dead guy. So you're talking about Fetterman's brain dead. Well, this was an actual dead guy. And then they had the Democrat Party decided, well, they would put his widow in to fill out his term, or, you know, to take his place. But it was lawless. But it keeps their machine in place, and that's all they care about is their machine. So sometimes they'll have a candidate that is, you know, maybe appears sort of, you know, moderate, but they open the door for that pro-abortion, pro-transgendered party to fill all the ranks. So they don't really care about Fetterman. I mean, Biden, for that matter, I've talked to a number of people that basically say when Obama Biden were in, the people that actually ran the day-to-day White House was Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, Anita Dunn, you know, along with James Clapper and John Brennan and a couple others. But so when Obama gets out of office, he goes down the street and builds a fortress headquarters, and who works for him but Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, Anita Dunn. And then when Biden gets elected, who goes back in their old positions but Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, Anita Dunn. And the story that I've been told is basically, you know, George Soros or whoever calls Obama, and he calls Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, Anita Dunn, and tells them what needs to happen in America. And Biden's just the puppet. He barely can read a teleprompter, and they let him take the heat and be made fun of. He doesn't really have a clue what's going on, but they get to do their agenda. And so that, to me, is their attitude with Fetterman. They don't really care. But if he is in, sure, he can take the ridicule for not being mentally there, but he allows their machine to run everything.
Keep going.
And okay, but Bill, it's eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. We have to make an issue of these things.
So the end game for a guy like George Soros, and I was talking to Bishop B.W. Jackson on the program yesterday, and he told me privately, he said he thinks Soros is the one that's really running the country. But so the end game for a guy like that, we destroy America, and then I am king? I mean, what do they think is going to happen that would better their lives. I mean, he's a billionaire. Obama has things, I mean, from the outside looking in, I mean, you got millions of dollars, you're famous and all this stuff. So what are they trying to do? Just build their own utopia where they're on top? Because they're not stupid. They know socialism doesn't work. Or are they just so deceived that they think, well, this time it will work?
Yeah, it's a one-world government. They've written about it. It's called the Great Reset, Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum. And basically, the patriotic, what they're now calling nationalist, they try to use a term that may have some negative connotations, but people that want to preserve their own nation, they're the enemy. They want globalism instead of nationalism. And all the way back to David Rockefeller, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, they have to have America be removed from its dominant position in the world, and in order to bring usher in a one world government.
What do you gain from a one world government?
Power. Well, when people have all the money they need, the next thing they crave is power. And Harry S. Truman said, it's like the lust for power is like gambling. It gets into a person's blood. There's William Henry Harrison, the 9th president. He said, where most sins grow weaker with age, the lust for power grows stronger. It's an undying worm in the gut. And so most people can't relate to it because they're good people and they just want to live their lives. But when you get into that that level of power, that it's insatiable, and it's, you know, any dictator throughout history would have been happy to have been the head of a one world government. Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, Ivan the Terrible, Napoleon, they often call it the spirit of Antichrist, but that's their goal. And they have to remove America, remove the U.S. dollar from its dominant position. So they're pushing to have it be replaced with other currencies like BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China, them to be able to carry on their transactions without using a U.S. dollar. And therefore, the dollar will lose its place as the world reserve currency. And the number one thing traded globally is oil, and it's always been traded in U.S. dollars. But now, they're beginning to trade oil and between Russia and China without using the U.S. dollar and stuff like that.
Well, people that think like that, this one world government, and I'm going to be one of the heads of it or whatever Obama thinks, whatever. Are they looking at citizenry as, well, they're just expendable. If we have to kill, a million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 million, whatever it is, 100 million. It's mind boggling to me how your brain could go that way thinking, yeah, that would be good. And how does that benefit them if they wipe out sectors of people? Just, we don't have any enemies anymore?
Yeah, the classic statement is, if a few people die, it's a tragedy. If a million people die, it's a statistic. In other words, you're emotionally unattached. And so, but you had 6 million died in the Napoleonic Wars. 30 million died with Genghis Khan. You had 80 million die with Mao Zedong. And so this is within many of our lifetime. It was the 1950s when they had the Cultural Revolution in China. And, we stood by while the ISIS killed millions of people, and we stood by while Biden gave Afghanistan to the Taliban in China. I mean, I've talked to military people that said they saw Chinese planes flying in while we were evacuating people out, and that there were military contractors. These are guys that after they served in the military, they went back over to Afghanistan to serve as security for power plants and water plants and And he says that they were American interests over there. Well, now they're guarding the same exact facilities for China. And Afghanistan is rare earth, you know, metals that are used in batteries. And basically Biden and Milley, and they just handed it all over to China. And but, you know, some people are waking up and others aren't. One of the things I did is I wrote a book on socialism. And I go through these quests for power and global government. And during the Cold War, after World War II, up till the fall of the Berlin Wall, you had decades of tactics that were employed to have the KGB would infiltrate countries to try to overthrow their leader and bring that country into a Soviet orbit. And the CIA would infiltrate countries and overthrow a leader to try to bring them into the American orbit. And there were tactics that were used. And the tactics included going into a country and doing critical theory. What's that? That's where you observe all the groups in a country. Ethnically, you know, Bosnians, Croats, Serbs, religiously, Sunni, Shia, Orthodox, economically, racially, doesn't matter. And you would call some victims and others oppressors, haves and have-nots, and then you would pit them against each other to have riots, and it would destabilize the country. And then you would, very important step, you would co-opt the media with bribes and threats to blame the leader of the country for all of these crises that are happening. And then you would nurture weaklings in the military. And when the country gets panicky enough and they're blaming the leader enough because of the media doing it, then they would do their coup or their rigged election and replace the leader with a Soviet puppet. And dozens of countries fell into the what was called, you know, behind the Iron Curtain or satellites of the Soviet Union through these tactics. And so we in America emulated that. So in 1953, Iran decides to side with the Soviet Union. The leader is Mossadegh, and he nationalizes their oil industry in Iran. And you think, well, big deal. Well, wait a second. Britain has no oil fields. So in 1908, Britain formed the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, better known as BP. Mm-hmm. And once Iran seized all the assets of the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, Britain was having an oil shortage. So they appealed to Eisenhower, who approves the first CIA operation to overthrow a country's leader. It's Operation Ajax. John Foster Dulles is the Secretary of State, right? The airport in Virginia is named after him. His brother, Alan Dulles, is the head of the CIA. And they send over Kermit Roosevelt Jr., the grandson of Teddy Roosevelt. And he is an expert in foreign languages. He goes to Tehran, and he recruits mobsters and gangsters and radical imams, and he stages protests and riots and attacking of mosques, and then co-opts the media with bribes and threats to blame Mossadegh for all of this social unrest and stirs the people up against him, and they nurture weaklings in the military. And when the country gets panicky enough and they're blaming Mossadegh enough, they put Mossadegh under house arrest, lock him away for the rest of his life where he dies, and replaced him with a Shah who loved America because we put him in. And yeah. And the CIA, you know, of course, Brezhnev and Khrushchev did the same thing with Yasser Arafat and put him in.
History just keeps repeating itself, and we see the same tactics. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being my guest today on Real Truth for Today, and thank you for giving your insights to the election and what happened. We didn't see a red wave, probably corruption taking place. But hey, God is still on his throne. We can trust him. Let's pray. The king's heart is as channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. Keep looking to Jesus no matter what. Shine and share, and God will use you for such a time as this. God bless.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.